What's up, guys? This is Coach Coop here with another episode of BHB Radio. Tonight, I am joined by one of my all-time favorite guests, Lauren Papanos. Lauren, you guys might remember from a previous episode where she dropped all kinds of knowledge bombs, breaking down women's hormones and how to balance them and a whole lot more. Tonight, we are actually going to do a pretty awesome, simple, practical deep dive on things like eating on the go, how to do that successfully, how to know what to order when you're out at a restaurant, snacking, just eating on the go in general. We're going to get into some other things too, like recommendations Lauren has on meals, snack ideas for her clients, her favorite supplements, and beyond. Tonight's episode is also brought to you by Real Ketones. Real Ketones are the pioneers in the exogenous ketone space, directly responsible for bringing them from strictly the clinical setting out to the masses so that literally anyone can enjoy the benefits of exogenous ketones. These benefits include energy, optimal health, relaxation, anxiety relief, performance, body composition benefits, including lean muscle mass preservation and body fat loss. There's actually even more benefits than that. It's literally like one of the superfoods, maybe the superfood of nutritional supplementation. So be sure to check out their full line of exogenous ketones at realketones.com. But it doesn't just stop there. They actually have full-on guides, rubrics, articles, and programs, nutrition programs, to help you guys get from where you're at now to where you need to go. On top of that, they also are involved with a bunch of research in the space, pushing along the science not only on ketones themselves, but nutrition on the whole. So I can't recommend you guys going and checking out realketones.com enough. Also, be sure to give them a follow on social media at Real Ketones. All right, guys, let's get this show on the road. Good evening, everyone. This is Coach Matt, and you are listening to Better Health and Body Radio, your source for the latest and greatest information and understanding in the world of health, nutrition, and performance, where we give you a seat at the table next to the best and the brightest minds to arm you with the information you need to optimize yourself. Join us for another exciting, thought-provoking episode of BHB Radio, starting now. All right, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, I learned a lot, and I mean a lot, at our last session. And I know our audience has grown since then. So for people who maybe didn't get a chance to tune in last time and maybe are not familiar with you and your work, do you mind kind of introducing yourself?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Lauren Papanos. I am a registered dietitian, functional medicine practitioner, and a certified specialist in sports dietetics. So all of that basically just means that I have a background in working with athletes, active individuals, but also practice in a more functional type manner with my philosophy. So I have a private practice based out of Los Angeles and see most of my patients virtually, but some in office, and do one-on-one nutrition coaching. And so that includes functional lab testing and then personalized nutrition, supplementation, and lifestyle modifications to be able to bring them to their highest expression of health. My main population is women, and specifically more women's hormones, women's health, but do a lot of gut health and sports nutrition within that umbrella as well.
Very nice. Yeah, actually, I remember last time that was the main deep dive we did for everyone listening at home. It was basically a pretty solid deep dive on women's hormones. So I highly suggest checking that out if you're listening now and maybe missed that last one. Yeah. On top of that too, how did you get into doing what you're doing? I mean, it sounds like you've had a pretty interesting journey bouncing around from athletes and, you know, high performance individuals all the way to working with women and helping with healing. So do you mind unpacking that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think we all, you know, end up where our passion is with our own personal health struggles, right? And so when I was in college, when I was becoming a registered dietitian, I was an athlete and was dealing with my own hormone issues at the time. And so just got really fed up with conventional medicine, just continuing to try to give me medications and really just not giving me solutions, and decided to take matters into my own hands and was already being trained in functional medicine at that point because I was in a functional medicine program. And so took a deep dive into that and started interning with various different dietitians and physicians in the functional medicine world. And from there, I decided to take my career into sports nutrition specifically, but was also doing private practice and working in women's hormones and all of the functional health components on the side. And was really just trying to bridge functional medicine with performance nutrition for the first few years of my career. And ultimately decided that my passion was in women's hormones and that I wanted to really take a deeper dive into that and working with my population. So that was really how I got to where I am today. And I'm super grateful because even just working with athletes in the first few years of my career who were high performing athletes, there was a lot of hormonal issues that I was dealing with at that time because I was working with both female and male athletes. And so I was able to really get more exposure into the hormone component in the athletic setting. And that was really fun because I love both. I love sports nutrition and I love hormones so much. And so being able to combine them is really my passion.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great to hear. And it's funny because that resonates with me as well. Some people on here might have heard this before, but in my own journey, I started out following a lot of mainstream health and fitness advice and definitely identified with myself being a little bit more on, the fitness and performance side as I got into this. And then as my own unique journey sort of evolved, I wound up getting pretty sick, from following a lot of said advice. And then so it led to me myself learning more about things like functional medicine and alternative methods, and that helped me resurrect my own health. And then from then on out, I kind of realized that health really does drive performance, and these things aren't mutually exclusive. And so, taking an integrative, or some might call it like holistic approach to helping people, whether it's healing, all the way to, being more like fitter, performing at a high level, I think that it's like a spider web, all the threads really intertwine.
Absolutely. I think it's a very underlooked component to performance, of really trying to optimize the inside first. And that's what I always tell my patients is that we have to optimize you from the inside out. So a lot of times people will come to me and, what we think of is just, I'm not happy with the external, right? I'm not happy with the way my body looks, but that's a result of internal dysfunction. And so if we work from the inside out, then health really does drive performance. Health drives that appearance, right? Which is what most people want in terms of optimizing their nutrition and their health.
And I think that's, A, it's well said. B, I think everyone at home should know that this isn't something that's, when we say health drives performance, it's not just about athletics, right? Like a friend of mine, Chris Albert, he once wrote an article called Fit But Rotting Inside. And it was all about how he had and others have taken themselves to a place to where on the outside they might look good and have a solid looking, aesthetic or body composition. They might even be strong, right? But on the inside, their body could be awash with chronic inflammation, have blood sugar issues, to your work, right? There could be some hormonal imbalances going on and things like that. And it was really, I think, eye-opening for a lot of people because, I don't really know where it comes from. Maybe you do, but there seems to be this whole idea of cutting corners with health and fitness, and this idea that, my health be damned, I'm just gonna slash calories like really heavily. I'm just gonna, or follow this sort of like fad for a while, and I'm just gonna kind of crash do this to get to where I want to be on a look level. And it's A, really not sustainable, B, not good for your health. And I think C, it's really not necessarily the right solution, even if there is some mild success up front. So I don't know, is that something you've encountered too in sort of health psychology?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we all in today's day and age, right, we live for instant gratification and we want the quick fix. And there's so much being marketed to us that we can have the quick fix. And so, when I tell someone, look, it's going to take us 6 months realistically to be able to optimize the inside so that we can optimize the outside. So for some people, that's too long. And I think it's just what our society puts onto our brain of what, how quickly we can achieve our health goals. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been on this journey to optimizing the internal and external for, 10 years now. And so I think we just have to remind ourselves that it takes time and we have to be happy and present as much as possible in that current moment of where our body is, and just remember that it is a lifelong journey to be able to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Dr. Ray Peet, Danny Roddy, people in the generative health community, generative energy community, they've talked about nutrition as this ongoing and health as this ongoing sort of refinement and continual refinement and a falling in love with the journey sort of process because, and I'm sure I hope I can speak for both of us here. I think that we keep having new understandings and new research comes out, or maybe new perspectives on old research and thoughts. And it's sort of like you might maybe be 80% or 90% of the way there with the house built, but then you're doing little remodels, here and there, that can maybe change something for you. It maybe experiment on yourself. And I think also for everyone listening at home, this isn't to say you necessarily forfeit any results up front when you start focusing on health and wellness to drive your fitness and how you look, things like that. It actually, I think a lot of these things start to come online up front to let you know you're on the right track, right? You'll start feeling better, you'll have more energy, you'll get little like gradual positive reassurances, and maybe having more good days than bad days, that you're on the right path. And I think your body does truly give you some of that feedback right away, which I think is helpful. And it's a testament to how adaptable we are as people.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
So on that note too, last time we did a bit of a deep dive into women's hormones. That was awesome. I love that conversation. I learned a lot. Today, speaking of deep dives, it's like sometimes I think that you and I as practitioners can sometimes maybe get a little 9 and 10 item or a little more complex, in other words, and then almost kind of realize that sometimes people just need extra help with the basics, right? So I wanted to know if you had any tips for people for things like snacking on the go, eating on the go. Maybe we can get into restaurants after that in the second part question there. But like, what are some of your thoughts on snacking and what are some of your snack options for people that and your clients that you recommend?
So I'm going to be completely honest with you. I am a non-supporter of snacking. I think that snacking can put us into a troubled environment, right? Where we maybe aren't eating intentionally. We're not thinking about what is the nutrient quality, what is the macronutrient consumption of what we're putting into our body when we snack. A lot of times when we snack, we do it mindlessly, right? When we're driving, when we're watching TV,
Right.
whatever the situation might be, right? And for all of those who are listening, I'm sure that you care about your metabolic health, or you probably wouldn't be utilizing our products. And so it's really important that when we're trying to work on metabolic health, that we're helping support our body's flexibility of burning what we have in storage and not always having to be dependent off of an exogenous or an external food source to be able to keep our energy going, right? Of course, there's a caveat to that, right? There's going to be times where you aren't able to get to a meal. It's already been 4 hours, which is generally long I would recommend waiting in between eating. And you're just needing something on the go because you're traveling and you're not able to get to a restaurant, right? So I'll provide you what some of those solutions should be. But I want to first explain, making sure that you're not using snacks in place of meals, and that the first emphasis is on how can I get quality meals into my day every 4 or 5 hours or so to be able to optimize my blood sugar and optimize my body's fuel burning processes.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. And yeah, I would say I fully agree. I think there's different definitions of snacking. And I think for most people, it does probably turn into kind of a mindless enterprise where they're just eating and grazing throughout the day. And it can really sneak in a lot of calories, maybe unbalance their macronutrient intake, their ratio of carbs, protein, and fat for those of you who may not know at home. So you're someone, it sounds like you like to create structure with meals and things like that. Now, is there sort of room in that framework for an and in both situation in which maybe people might be eating, let's say, a few bigger square meals during the day, and then there are like some of the meals might be a little bit lighter and a quote unquote
Definitely.
snack-esque, but maybe more like there's more thought that goes into it.
Yeah, so normally how I recommend structuring your day is, depending on how long your fasting period is between dinner and breakfast the next day. But that first meal being somewhere, 12 to 16 hours after your breakfast from the or from your dinner, I'm sorry, from the day prior. And then from there having, maybe a lunch or your second meal about 4 or 5 hours after that. And then most people are typically going to need a bridge snack, is what I call it, that bridges lunch to dinner. It's really important, especially if you are eating a lunch around the traditional time of 12 to 1, and then you're not eating dinner until 6 or 7. If you're going into dinner and it's been 6 or 7 hours and you haven't had anything in between, you're probably going to go in and be very hungry. You might make poor food decisions. You might need to feel like you need to snack on chips before you make dinner, right? And so having that bridge snack can help prevent that so that you're hungry when you get to dinner time, but you're not ravenous and you can make calculated good nutrition decisions. And so that's where doing a really good balanced snack in between there, maybe around 3 or 4 o'clock hour, can be really beneficial for supporting what you're going to eat at dinner time and also helping with that midday crash that most people tend to feel around that 3 or 4 o'clock hour.
That's really helpful, and I think helps kind of like reframe the idea of smaller meals or quote unquote snacking for people listening, so they know how to maybe intelligently do it in a way that's going to help them. On that note too, are there any sort of sample ideas for like a bridge meal or a bridge snack or that you tend to recommend for your clients?
Definitely. I think the main priority there is a protein source. Protein is something that you should be trying to get in equal dosages often throughout the day. So what I mean by that is instead of trying to get in, a 10-ounce piece of meat at dinner time, take your total protein needs and spread that out evenly amongst your maybe 3 meals and your bridge snack. So that might look like 20 to 40 grams of protein at that snack, just depending on what your total protein needs are for the day. And then from there, depending on what your goals are, if you are trying to gain weight, you're trying to gain muscle, you might need a little bit more calories at that bridge snack. If you're trying to lose weight, then that bridge snack might just be protein that you're ingesting at that time. And so, that could be something as simple as just a protein shake that you pair with maybe you have some with some almond milk. Or if you're trying to use that bridge snack as a way to also get in a little bit more calories, then that might be a protein shake that you now pair with some raw nuts and maybe some berries or some raw vegetables, right? And now you get a little bit more calories, a little bit more nutrients in there, but it's still the emphasis is around that protein at that meal time or that snack time.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really helpful. And I think that kind of it depends answer is true. And I think you gave some good guidelines for people to work that into their routine. I myself, I've done all those things that you just recommended. Sometimes it is just protein if it's pretty easy for me to make my fat requirements and carb requirements for the day. Other than that, right? Maybe I'm getting that into my other meals. Sometimes I think, protein is maybe the toughest to get in for people. I mean, I've done things like tins of wild caught oysters, which is like nature's multivitamin and has a ton of zinc content. And then in addition to that too, I've liked those keto meal bars that Chief Science Officer Gary Millett has created from Real Ketones, and those have been helpful with getting me like a predominantly like protein-based snack just to kind of satiate me and my clients as well too.
Yeah, I think that those are really great components to work around. And then, I mean, even just like a good grass-fed beef jerky there, or like a nitrate-free deli meat can be really convenient too. Because most of the time around that time frame, people are on the go. You might not have time to sit down for a meal, but if you do, then throw together a smoothie and you can throw there vegetables, you can throw a ton of nutrients into a smoothie and take that on the go, depending on where you're headed around that time frame. So think of it more so as like a small meal, right? Just like you said with the oysters, kind of we associate that more with a meal. Think of it more as a small meal rather than snacking type options, because snacks truly are more processed than our small meals.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of them can contribute to getting like an overabundance of one macronutrient that maybe you otherwise wouldn't overeat, right? Like maybe like a way, even if it could be even healthy in some cases, like way too much fat or way too much carbs for a day. Let's say if you're snacking on thing X, Y, or Z. I think other things that have helped me too is I've done
like a little bit of goat yogurt with some cinnamon and collagen protein in there as well. And then, just maybe like a single serving or two of fruit if I was going to make something like lighter. On that note too, I think that kind of dovetails well into the next question that I had for you. And that's, what advice or guidelines do you have that you might give your clients who might be eating out of necessity? Let's say if they're traveling for work or they're kind of a soccer mom on the go and there's a soccer tournament this weekend. Like what are some of your, in case of emergency, break glass solutions for when people are eating out at restaurants?
It's a great question, and I think really relevant as we move into summertime, right? Because
Oh yeah.
definitely more traveling and eating out happening. And with the world opening back up, we all want to be eating out more since we were confined for so long, right?
Right.
But I think the first thing is, looking at the environment, the situation of do you have the ability to bring any options for yourself that maybe could supplement what you're not able to get? So, for example, you have to go to your kid's softball tournament and you're going to be sitting at the field all day. You know that the only good options are going to be hot dogs and candy at the snack bar. Can you bring a cooler with you that maybe has a pre-made meal in it, or do something similar to like the snack options we talked about, where you pair that together for a meal? So maybe you bring some nitrate-free deli turkey, and then you have a bag of baby carrots, and you have a guacamole cup with it, right? And you kind of make a meal out of that. That could be a really good option. If you're going into a restaurant, then I would always recommend looking for the most vegetable-heavy dish that there is on the menu. And sometimes this is going to be easier than others, and this might depend on where you are as well, because in more remote cities, it might be more challenging to find something that has vegetables that are heavy on the menu. But sometimes that could be a salad, and then there might be a ton of toppings on there, like candied pecans and cranberries and things that are just contributing more sugar. But can you take those off of the salad so that the salad remains, a vegetable heavy dish that you can add some protein to as a side on top of it? That would be a really good substitute. The other thing that I like to explain to people too is thinking of your meal more in compartments. And so if you're able to practice with this at home, where you maybe don't make a mixed dish every night, you don't make a stir fry some nights, you make more of a, I'm gonna make a protein, I'm gonna make a vegetable, and then I'm gonna have a fat source on the side with it, so that you can visually see what that looks like on your plate. And that way, when you get to a restaurant, you can do something similar where you get a baked fish dish and then you add in some roasted vegetables and a house salad. And then you can compare those portions to what your portions might be at home and then determine how much of that meal you should eat and then take the rest to go. That's a really good way to stay within your macronutrient targets if you really are trying to work towards weight loss or you have specific body composition goals.
Interesting, very interesting. Yeah, that's all incredibly helpful information. I think one thing that I've always found helpful as well is as much as you can, and it's not always going to work this way, but as much as people can, almost going into the situation, meaning eating out, like with an idea of, okay, like this is a place where I am trying to eat healthy at. They have great options on the menu. I'm going to do as close as I can to get an A minus or like a B plus here, or just do what I can, right, to stay on track. I think having that mindset ahead of time of, all right, I'm going to stay on track or do my best to stay on track versus, okay, this is a vacation or, I've been very good for a while. This is an instance in where I want to indulge myself and maybe not go with some of the worst offenders here, like, wheat, gluten, and industrial seed oils like soy, canola oil, things like that. But I am going to enjoy myself. Do you think there's anything to kind of being able to like have a positive mindset or maybe a little bit of a framework mindset when you go and sit down to eat for someone? Because I just tend to find that if someone doesn't have that preordained mindset going into it, they tend to be more likely to like say, oh, well, I'll just have a little of this or I'll have a little extra of that. And then that kind of becomes their new normal at every restaurant, every time they sit down, and they end up kind of sabotaging themselves. Whereas I think if you kind of maybe most of the time go into it saying, all right, I'm going to stay on track. This is what I'm doing. And I kind of know that up front. It becomes easier to not only A, pick the right restaurant, but B, be adaptable when you do eat. And then when you really do want to kind of indulge and enjoy yourself, you kind of go into it with that mindset already. And I just think it allows people to kind of almost color in the lines a little bit more when it comes to their diet. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've found that to be helpful. What do you think?
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I always call it keeping health boundaries, right? Because there's so many different ways that we can boundary our life. And sometimes it might seem upfront like that's being selfish or that's not respecting whatever other people might think, you know, is this person going to think X, Y, or Z about me? But I'll just speak on my own behalf, but also what I see a lot of with my clients is that when you can set those boundaries on your health, then you can establish consistency. And that consistency is what then opens up doors to changing your health outcomes, right? So that those health boundaries might be, for example, my own personal boundaries are, I work out first thing in the morning before I do anything else, right? That's a boundary where I don't set any other appointments. I don't do anything else. It's just a way that I know that I'm going to accomplish getting my workout done. There's no questions asked for the day, right? So that's something that you can establish, but very similar to going out to eat at a restaurant. If you go into that situation and you say, okay, I'm going to have one alcoholic beverage, or I'm going to have a dessert tonight, but I'm going to only have a portion of it and I'm going to split it with my significant other. That is a boundary that you've already created. So when you go into that meal, you already know how to act, right? You already know the decision that you're going to make, rather than there being dessert presented to you, there being bread on the table, and you feeling like, oh, I might want to take a pick here or there. Instead, you go in, you already have those boundaries, and it's like you already have expectations and you already know how to stay within those boundaries to be successful with that meal.
Absolutely. Very well said. Yeah, I was curious if you had any thoughts on that too. So it's nice to know we were kind of on the same wavelength without even not even intending to.
Totally.
I think another helpful question that would be good for our audience that I also think that I tend to get asked a lot as a fellow health practitioner is like, are there types of restaurants, right, that you tend to recommend for people, you know, like Japanese food or sushi or things like that, just to give one example, or let's say like a barbecue place or a burger place, 'cause you know, you can at least get like some solid meat and protein portions there. Like, is there any like kind of like types of restaurants that you do tend to recommend people go to, like just to give some examples, and then maybe a few that you were like, absolutely no way, no how, do not go here.
I think that a fish grill is always a really good start, because if it has grill in the name, or even like a steakhouse type restaurant, those will generally have what I was explaining with the compartments, right? Where you can do an entree and you can get the protein as the base, and then you can pick the sides or you can modify the sides accordingly. So I think those are always a really good start. Of course, that's going to be a little bit more upscale. So it just depends on your situation of, is it grab and go you're trying to get, or, you know, do you have time to be able to sit down at the restaurant? Another more quick on the go that I really love is Mediterranean food, because
good call.
Yeah, it seems to do like Mediterranean food does protein really well. There's always kebabs you can get, or you can get a quarter or a half chicken. So you can be really clear on the protein and getting enough of that. And then there's typically a salad that's paired with it. You can get vegetables, or if you're doing any starches, you can get like a rice on the side with it. So it's a little bit of a cleaner option, I would say, in terms of the ingredients. There's not very much of our refined carbohydrates and seed oils that are used in it. And you know, you can get with a salad dressing olive oil, right? And use that as opposed to going to some of these other restaurants where they're going to give you a sugar and industrial seed oil Latin dressing on top of that salad.
Yeah. I think that's a great call. And I think that maybe that's a bigger picture piece of advice for people is try to go to places where like most of the meals are like protein centric, right? Or like, you know, let's say meat and egg centric. Obviously that there is room within that for you to get like a, you know, there's a higher end quality where things are sustainably sourced and coming from, you know, raised and fed the right way, where you're going to be able to get the right nutrients from them. And there's also framework for that statement to be taken and people to go to fast food, which we don't recommend, but you know, obviously a little bit of common sense there, I think sort of helps. But is that, do you think that would be fair advice, is trying to go to restaurants where protein is sort of the centerpiece of the meals, you know, because that way they're going to get, you know, some fat, probably some healthy fat. And of course, they're going to get a pretty good protein portion too. And then they can kind of finesse around that depending on their needs and goals. Like you said, whether they need extra carbohydrates or a little extra fat.
Yeah, I think that's a great starting point. And then, you know, also making sure that they have vegetables on the menu, right?
Yeah.
Those are always an essential component too. And I think, like you said, you know, I mean, even if there's not quality, a lot of times restaurants, they're not going to purchase grass-fed and pasture-raised because it's just very expensive, right? But if you can at least go somewhere where they have a leaner cut of meat, maybe they have a fish or they have a chicken versus having a really fatty hamburger, that's always a really good start too for just improving the quality of the protein.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have that same friend that I talked about earlier, Chris, who wrote the Fit But Rotting Inside article. He actually had thoughts on that too. And his sort of ethos was, you know, if I'm eating out, you know, and then they have good quality meat, then I'm going to be okay ordering like, you know, like a semi-lean or having some fat on that meat. However, his thoughts were, you know, if I'm really in a pinch, I'm traveling, I'm like, I'm eating at the airport or something like that, or there's just nothing else around, you know, I'm really unsure about their quality of meat there. He said he tends to go for leaner things because the fat is where both positive nutrients and also some possible toxins and nastier things can get stored, depending on just how the animal was fed. So his thoughts on that were like kind of what you said. He's like, I'm going to eat, like make sure I'm eating quite a bit leaner if the place is not going to have a good quality of meat there that they source, which I always found interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely valid and something that I agree with.
Yeah, awesome. Now, are there other places too, like just sort of archetype type places, examples of places you would just say to avoid at all costs? Like I have to imagine places like, you know, a fast food, you know, typical burger and fries fast food place, or a typical, you know, Mexican food fast food place, things like that would be different than, let's say, if you were eating at like a good burger or like a better quality Mexican food place, right? Because with a lot of these ultra, shall we call them ultra, like common, big time, almost, you know, yeah, huge corporation type chains, they tend to cut corners in their food quality. They tend to have a lot of strange additives, even in things that shouldn't have additives, like meat. You know, they're definitely not using a good quality of meat. Sometimes they're not even using, let's say, in a burger, an actual cow. They're using some other type of bovine animal. They're usually using a ton of oils. Like, is that something that you would say is just ain't no way, no how for most people? And are there any other types of restaurants you would add to that list?
I think that that's a really good place to start. I mean, I know that I've lived in some small towns and it's hard in those small towns. I lived in West Texas a couple of years ago and it's almost impossible to find any restaurant that has anything of remotely decent quality. I mean, even if you go to a grill, there's hardly any vegetables on the menu. And if they are, they're laden with a ton of industrial oils, or it's a salad that has just romaine lettuce and Caesar dressing, right? So it can be definitely challenging in some towns, but I always personally, when I'm looking for a restaurant, I always will type in like health food restaurant or health food store, because a lot of times you can find these little mom and pop type restaurants where they maybe have a deli or they have a salad bar where you can make something that is higher quality and you can modify it more specific to what your individual needs are, rather than just searching restaurant, because a lot of times when you search restaurant, you're going to end up with a lot of your chain type food places.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's very good advice. Just simply searching that, I think, can help a lot of people. And now I know we're going to wrap up here in a second, and I want to be respectful of your time. But one thing we didn't get to cover last time that I was super curious to get your take on is supplements. And I know that there's a lot of if this, then that, and it depends that goes on here. But maybe they're like, do you have any sort of supplements that are ubiquitous, maybe just a couple of essential supplements that you tend to put all your clients on, or let's say a vast majority of them?
Definitely. I think that a quality omega-3 supplement is really important. And when I say quality, I stress the word quality because all are not created equal. And so you are looking for a brand that does use the triglyceride form and that is cold pressing, cold extracting the omega-3 supplement. But there's just so many purposes of where omega-3s are beneficial to health. And so I think that that's a must for pretty much all people. I also think that a quality multivitamin can be really important for some people, and that maybe in terms of how long you use it or how much you use it would really depend on your individual labs, but it can at least be a really good baseline to fill in the gaps that you might not be getting through your diet. And so with that, you're looking for those vitamins to be in their most active form. Instead of using something like a cyanocobalamin for B12, you're looking for a methylated or an active form of the B12. And you also want to make sure that when you're purchasing multivitamins, that it's not a one a day. We sometimes want to go the one a day route, right? Because it's less pills, but you can't fit very much into a one a day. So it's just not going to give you as much nutrients as you possibly need. Think of how many different vitamins are being squished into one pill, right? So you really are looking for more of your 3 or 4 capsules per day for it to be a quality multivitamin. So I think those are 2 really good places to start. And then I would say majority of people probably need a magnesium supplement as well. We burn through more magnesium when we're stressed. We need it to support our electrolytes, especially if you are on a lower carbohydrate diet. It's really great for our nervous system and for exercise performance. So with that, depending on what you're using it for, there's many different forms, but for most people, a magnesium chelate or a glycinate form is probably the best place to start. And that would be something that you would probably want to take in the evening hours to be able to help with relaxing your central nervous system.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very well said. Yeah, I personally take the magnesium glycinate myself. I know that when it comes to the multivitamin, at Real Ketones, Chief Science Officer Gary Millett, because so many of our listeners are coming from a low carb background, at least initially, and or they are interested in that, and or just sort of, you know, eating kind of ancestrally one way or another, right? He made sure to include an additional boosted electrolyte formula in the multivitamin as well. You know, basically you'll find more electrolytes and minerals in that than you would in a typical multivitamin supplement. So I think that your point about additional electrolyte mineral supplementation and hydration is, you know, and of course sodium intake is important for people to keep in mind.
Absolutely.
Now, so speaking of like earlier, right, you know, the last question I have for you, you know, we were talking about kind of bridging that gap between, all right, let's try to be as healthy as possible, which will actually drive our fitness, right? So now on a little bit more on the fitness side as well, in terms of some supplements that you might, you know, recommend people include, let's say for energy or for performance, right? That seems to open up this sort of Pandora's box where you find things like, you know, your typical big box brand pre-workout or fat burner and things like that, that tend to potentially come with side effects. Maybe they don't really do what they claim. Have you experimented at all yourself and or with clients using exogenous ketones in that realm there, let's say pre-workout or for energy and things like that? And what kind of results have you noticed?
Definitely. Yeah. I use exogenous ketones myself. As I mentioned, I do a lot with hormones. I use them a lot with my PCOS clients to be able to help with improving insulin sensitivity and pair that with diet and lifestyle changes, of course, but I've seen really good success with being able to cut insulin in half through the exogenous ketones and the diet and lifestyle changes. I was able also to bring down my own insulin levels by doing so. And I also use it for athletes if we're trying to preserve glycogen to be able to help with prolonged exercise where maybe they are, you know, running or they're biking, cycling for hours. And we want to make sure that we're preserving glycogen as long as possible. That's where I also think that they can be beneficial in the training phase to be able to help with that adaptation.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, that's basically kind of what I was interested in, is like there's just so many fitness/performance benefits for ketones and then also health and wellness benefits too. I was curious if you had any thoughts on how those areas have bridged. And yeah, you that was exactly what I was thinking, what you said. I think it's interesting too when you talk about giving it to people who have certain conditions, like your PCOS clients and things like that, because it's an interesting concept that you can basically just take an additional energy source and put it into the cells, the mitochondria. That's your energy factories for everyone listening at home, that then turn around and support everything that we do, from hormone manufacture to metabolism to, other phases of metabolism to thinking to muscle firing. So I think that that's a way to kind of help almost like top off gas tanks for people who might be struggling with you know, fatigue syndromes, hormone imbalances, and various other conditions. It also can be something that can help with body composition, as you said too, right? Like it's, you're preserving muscle mass and muscle glycogen, and I've seen research showing that they're muscle sparing. So in some ways too, if you are going to train, to perform, you're going to have an additional fuel source, almost like a hybrid car, to run through without dipping into the precious glycogen that you might want to, you know, use for deeper phases of the workout or other things.
Absolutely. I think there's a ton of efficacy. And I think also just more anecdotally too, helping with appetite suppression and just being able to help if, as we talked about earlier, if maybe you are a big snacker and you struggle with being able to wait enough time between meals and you're trying to train your body into becoming better at that, I think that can be another way to include the ketones, is to help train your body to become more flexible metabolically.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's another very good point. And, you know, I kind of hope this is where the future of supplementation goes, right? It's sort of like taking that functional medicine, practitioner grade quality, and of course, mindset, and saying, all right, like, what can we do to build up health that can then not only improve our health itself, but also our fitness, our physique, our performance. And that's one interesting thing I think about some of the kind of innovative performance supplements coming out, like exogenous ketones, is that they're really bridging that gap between almost like a quote unquote superfood supplement or a supplement with multiple health benefits and that performance side. So I think that it slots nicely into that bigger picture we were talking about of marrying those two worlds of fit and high performing with health and wellness.
I agree with that.
On that note, you've been more than generous with your time. I know I'd love to have you on again in the future. Maybe we can make that happen. But for people in the interim who want to maybe learn more about you, I think you've got some courses out there and some new things exciting that are in the pipeline. Do you mind telling people where they can find you and learn more about you?
Definitely. So my website is functionalfueling.com, www.functionalfueling.com. And then I'm also active over on Instagram. My handle is @nutritionwithlo. And then if you go to my website, you can find more information about my podcast. I have a podcast called Your Nutrition BFF. I have a Pinterest page where I post lots of recipes, a blog on there. So if you start at functionalfueling.com, you'll be able to get to all those different avenues. But yes, lots in the works to come, and it's an exciting time. But I appreciate you having me on today, and I'm happy to come back at any point.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lauren. All right, everybody. That was another awesome episode. I always appreciate the time that I get to spend with Lauren, and I get to learn from her too, right along with you guys. So be sure to check her out at Functional Fueling Nutrition, and hopefully I get to have her on again here real soon. All right, everybody. This has been another awesome episode of BHB Radio. Looking forward to catching you guys next time.